Greetings, everybody, and welcome to League Express Towers, and welcome to a brand new Total Rugby League show, pre-recorded live on a Wednesday lunchtime. And joining me here in the League Express offices, we're joined by, once again, Mr. Matthew Shaw.
Howdy, howdy.
Martin Sothers here, and a big welcome back to Mr. Alan Bower.
I'm honoured. Here I am.
So hello everybody and welcome to this week's show, as well as a preview for this weekend's matches. Later in the show we're also going to be talking about the game in Manchester, as we'll be catching up with the Manchester Rangers. But before that, where to start and what to say? Catalans v Warrington, we might as well start there and get it out of the way. I mean, it's not the best.
Well, no. Can I just start by saying anyone who is blaming James Child for this needs to get in the bin. That's all I really want to say on the matter, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the players were out of control, weren't they? It would have taken more than one referee to calm them down, I think. What spilled over into the stands was not the fault of the players, because I've been at a lot of sporting events and been infuriated with what I've seen on the pitch, but I've never felt the need to punch anyone. So everyone's accountable for their own actions, I think. The players have got to take some serious responsibility for the way they conducted themselves on the field. The fans who were involved in any sort of misdemeanours should hang their heads in shame, and I would hope some serious bans are coming their way, because I would like to see this be a bit of a watershed moment for the game and crowd trouble. I think we do bury our head in the sand sometimes a little bit as a sport by calling ourselves a family game over and over again, and in reality, stuff like this does happen sort of semi-regularly. You know, it's only a couple of years removed from those horrific scenes at Huddersfield. Salford players had to jump into the crowd, didn't they, to get to their families. So let's not pretend this is a one-time thing. Let's hope the governing body take it seriously and really come down on those involved.
What can be done, Martin?
My reaction to the game itself on the field, putting aside the crowd trouble just for a moment, it was the first game in Super League I've seen where I really thought two referees would have been useful. In fact, and you know, and it was an incredibly difficult game for James Child to referee, because both sides, and I do say both sides, I mean, I think, you know, obviously more Catalans players have been banned than Warrington players, but I think, you know, it was a very bad tempered game throughout, and I've no doubt that the Catalans players deserve to get what's happened. You know, what's happened to them. But when you get teams that are just wanting to fight effectively, it becomes a very difficult game to referee. And for one referee, so, you know, I've not seen a game before where I've thought the same thing. In relation to the crowd trouble, I mean, it was really funny at the weekend, because I actually tweeted about it and said, you know, I'd condemn the violence, and I don't think the Catalan Dragons deserve, you know, to have this happening on their patch. And actually quite a lot of Warrington supporters came back to me and seemed to think I was criticising Warrington for, you know, alone for that, which obviously was absolutely nonsensical. And it sort of did illustrate the fact that, you know, fans are so club-centric that they'll see an implied criticism of their club where there isn't one, really. Or they'll see a biased viewpoint where there isn't one. And it's a bit frustrating. But, you know, I think we're right that some people have got to be banned from attending rugby league matches again, whichever side they were supporting on Saturday. If they were troublemakers, and there's been some video footage to show people causing trouble, then they need to be out of the game.
One group of people who can't be biased in all this is the RFL and Super League, who've lodged an investigation. So you'd imagine whatever comes out is fact.
Yeah, so a few things. Shouldn't be a points deduction. Stupid idea.
What about the comments from both head coaches at the end of the game?
Yeah, they should be. It was very, very irresponsible. Very irresponsible.
And I think it always is. I think coaches very often speak like that, actually. And, you know, this idea that the coaches can speak out with impunity is ridiculous, because, you know, and it shows, you know, the coaches of either side or any side, whenever a coach criticises a referee, I think it just takes away the credibility of the game a little.
It comes back to what we talked about a few weeks ago, the blame culture in the game. Something bad happened, let's blame someone else. So even if it's subconscious, I firmly believe that that is that is in our game. But there should be no points deduction, because if you do a points deduction, what would then stop a Wigan fan going up in a Saints shirt totally wicked stage and causing trouble to try to get? You can't do that.
Surely nobody suggested that seriously.
Loads of people the other thing is that alcohol should be banned from games. Well, hang on. Let's just put one thing straight here. I like a drink as much as the next guy. When I have a drink, I don't feel the need to be I don't know if we can swear on this podcast. I don't feel the need to be an idiot. Don't feel the need to have a punch up. So for me, the quite simple thing is the people who can't behave after they had a drink are banned from the game. Not allowed in. Simple as that.
Sure, sure. I couldn't agree.
Why should a minority ruin it for everyone else who can behave and have a good time?
Yeah. Well, we mentioned James Child there. He'll be refereeing a championship game this weekend, mainly due, I think, just to get him out of the limelight, I think, more than anything. And
I feel he's been really hard done to.
Do you reckon?
Really hard done to. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pick apart his refereeing performance, whether it was good, bad or indifferent. All I'm saying is he cannot be blamed for what happened in the stands and the way the players control themselves. What I would say is, I think he hasn't really been very well protected by anyone in this whole situation. I feel a great deal of sympathy for James Child.
Well, I would like to see somebody in the RFL or Super League coming out and actually saying that, you know, James Child is not to blame for this. I think, you know, what you've just said is absolutely correct. And I think they should be saying it, not just us.
Yeah. I'm coming to you now, Aaron. You're right. The RFL and Super League have just put out a holding statement at time of recording. That was soon after. I mean, this is probably the third podcast out this week that's out there. Will we hope for some kind of response by the time Sky Sports goes to air on Thursday night?
Oof, I wouldn't hold your breath. I know that they were deliberating over whether to update people on a semi-regular basis or whether to wait until the investigation was completed. Obviously, there's no real precedent in terms of how long an investigation for something like this can take, so I think we're just all going to have to be a little bit patient, I suspect. The one thing I do agree with is that I would have liked to have seen some strong defence of James Child, because he's had some pretty torrid stuff thrown his way in terms of blame. I'd have liked Steve Ganser to have come out and defended him. I would have very much liked the head of referees to have come out and defended one of his own, but it seems like you do well to get something public out of Steve Ganson, doesn't it, in this game? He doesn't put his head above the parapet very often. Mm. And I think this was one occasion where he probably should have come out in defence of one of his officials.
I mean, how long does it take to review the footage back, make sure the refereeing decisions are...
Well, they do it before the referee appointments, don't they? For the week after, so...
Even if it's just...
Yeah, they've already been made. Yeah.
You know, the comments after the game were unacceptable. And we deal with the referees, not the head coaches.
Yeah, you know, again, I'm not big on comparing rugby league to other sports, but you do see it in football. If Pep Guardiola comes out and criticises the officials, he gets dealt with by the FA. They come down hard on him. I think there was a case there, certainly, for a word to be had to Steve Price and Steve McNamara, because I don't think... They aren't two of the coaches that you would necessarily associate with constantly criticising officials. So I don't think there's any need to come down on them too hard, but I think there was certainly a case to maybe warn them about future conduct and future comments, because that, again, like Matt says, was just the blame culture in full swing.
I don't think that referees should be immune from criticism.
No.
I just think, given what happened, I thought it was a little bit irresponsible for them to come out and both blame the ref. I think they just shouldn't have mentioned
the problem, I mean, you're right, of course he shouldn't be immune from criticism, but the problem very often is that immediately after a game, a coach will criticise the referee, will say, you know, decisions didn't, you know, wrong decisions and so on and so forth, and that's why we lost, only to then discover on reviewing it early in the week that actually the decisions were very often the right ones on the field. Yeah. You know, so... You know, my view is that if a coach is going to criticise a referee's decision straight after a game, he ought to then come out when he's reviewed the evidence properly and say, look, I was wrong in that situation. Certainly that's what I would want to do.
The other thing as well is people may like this or like not. Fans are one-eyed. They see things through rose-tinted glasses. How many games do we go to, Aaron, where the fans will be going mad about it, and we'll just both of them, well, that was the right call. Last year, I went to watch Halifax with my dad, brother, and all the people I used to go watch with, and they were screaming and moaning at the referee for all sorts, and I'm like, nope, right call, nope, right call. And then they're like, oh, was it? I'm like, yep, no, all right, okay.
That's the thing. That's the thing. When you're watching any sport in a press box, you know, you go on the forum after and you go, what on earth, what game were you watching?
I was, I did Halifax to lose on Sunday. Halifax won the penalty kick, I think it was 10-6. I thought they got quite a few favourable calls away, if I'm honest. And then all the tweets I got in reply after the game was the Facts fans moaning about the referee for letting Toulouse away with everything. I'm like, am I missing something here?
Yeah. I mean, another example of fans being one-eyed. I mean, every Sunday night, I always put the front page of League Express on Twitter. And I'm assailed by fans, you know, whatever club is on the front page, the fans of several other clubs will always have a go at me saying, why is it not our club?
I remember over Easter, Salford had beat Warrington, and me and Aaron got a tweet, we got tagged in the same tweet saying, really disappointing you guys haven't mentioned that Salford have a great result this week. So you get criticised if you praise a club by all the other clubs, and if you don't praise a club, you get criticised for that.
Lads, you three, if you weren't getting those kind of messages, you'll miss it. Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
at least it's nice to be noticed.
Exactly,
<isn't it?
laughs> that's the thing. Just before we get on to this weekend's matches and a preview, another piece of news from this week, and it's been brewing in the past month or so as well, is Bradford at Oddsall. And Aaron, you've done a piece on page two in League Express this week. It is a very tricky situation Bradford Bulls find themselves in here, because no one's got any money.
No, exactly. You know, it's tricky, but at the same time, it's also very straightforward that I think they'll be playing at Oddsall next year. I think it's pretty straightforward.
You're the first one to actually say that. I've
That's only my own opinion. That's not formed off talks I've had with anyone or anything like that. It's just how I think this all finishes. It's very much got the shade of Wakefield's annual battle with Wakefield Council and a bit of a game of brinksmanship. And we're going to move out of the city and then eventually we decide to stay. They ain't going to Bradford City. I know that for a fact. They can't afford to move there. Simple as that. It costs Bradford City in excess of £1 million a year to play there, so good luck getting the money to play there when you can't afford to play. Oddsall, allegedly. Horsfall is tricky because it only has a working capacity of 3,040.
It's not ready, that place, is it, for that?
No, they looked last year when they were in the mix to get promoted to the conference about extending it to 4,000, and they thought they could do it, but at the same time, is 4,000 big enough? Probably not. So that leaves them with Oddsall and Dewsbury, and I think if they don't know deep down that moving the club out of the city into Dewsbury would probably kill it.
It's a Swinton situation, isn't it?
Then they're just deluded.
That's the danger of coming like Swinton.
Although it's not actually killed Swinton, has it? That's the interesting thing about that.
True.
I think it would Bradford. I don't see why Bradford can't stay at Oddsall. Obviously, the finances are expensive. What I will say is, if they stay at Oddsall, the financial structure of the club will have to change drastically.
Yeah, they've got...
Because if they are at Oddsall...
Less full-time players.
Yeah, if they're at Oddsall, the mid- to long-term viability of that club doesn't exist.
They've got to get out of there. I'm sorry. Then this is someone who stood on those terraces as a kid. They've got to get out of there. It was not fit for purpose 15 years ago. It's certainly not fit for purpose now. I would imagine the longer they stay there, parts of the ground will get condemned.
But where can they go?
I don't know, but safety certificates will become an issue eventually, because it's just it's a hazard. It's a decrepit, crumbling pit. And I think Horsfall long term, if they and Bradford Park Avenue and Bradford Council could strike up some sort of deal by where there is a community stadium of sorts in South Bradford. It's only half a mile down the road. I think there's the potential for Horsfall Stadium to be the future of Bradford Bulls. But again, it comes down to Bradford Council, who own the lease on that stadium. And the issue that we've got here is that council haven't got any money. So why would the council then magic some money up to do Horsfall Stadium?
Out of interest, there was talk that Richard Dunn was going to get turned into a sporting facility. Whatever happened to that?
Well,
that come down to
there is a sports centre being built a mile down the road, and I think legally Richard Dunn's can't be touched until that sports centre is finished.
Is it still open? It's not open anymore, is it, Richard Dunn?
Yeah, it is. Oh, is it? Yeah. Right, okay. And it's not too far off being finished, that sports centre, right. So there's some prime real estate land coming up for grabs over the road before too long. But again, unless somebody's coming in and offering to build Bradford Bulls a stadium, why are the council going to build a site opposite when Oddsall's already there.
If Bradford Bulls did move out of Oddsall, that would leave the RFL holding a lease and the council holding the freehold, you would imagine then that there would be the potential for that land to be sold. I mean, I know there's a restrictive covenant probably saying got to be used for sport.
Well, no, it's expired now.
It's expired. Well, in that case, the land must presumably have some significant value. There's that corridor going down to the M606 that it adjoins, which has been, described as being potentially great housing land at some point.
Yeah, well, they've already housing next to it.
The thing, so surely there's the potential to raise some money from selling Oddsall for development and then putting that money into that, what you've just been talking about, either at Horsfall or somewhere else.
If that's possible, I think that's an avenue well worth exploring, because...
Haven't Bradford been there before, though, with a Tesco? I seem to remember a Tesco.
Well, this is what Bradford were trying to do when they announced earlier this year that they were going to get the go-ahead to redevelop Oddsall, that they were going to go and consult third parties, big businesses, and get them in, I think similar to what Warrington did with Halliwell Jones, isn't it? Tesco paid in, and they said, well, we'll pay for some of the stadium if we can have a site on your stadium. So that is the only hope for Oddsall, but that is dependent on the council relinquishing the freehold, which I just don't think they will do, because, like Martin's just said, it's prime land, it's worth a lot of money. Why would they give up a golden goose like that? I think the Bradford Bulls hierarchy would be wise to take emotional attachment out of this now. Oddsall's great, it's got a lot of history, but Central Park had a lot of history, and Wilderspool had a lot of history, Thrumall had a lot of history.
Yeah.
You've got to move on. You know, Knowsley Road had a lot of history. I just think for the good of that club and for the good of rugby league in the city, they've got to start exploring serious, not pie in the sky, we're moving to Valley Parade, because that's just ridiculous and it's not going to happen. They need to start exploring realistic alternative opportunities, and I think Horsfall is one of them. I think the owner of Bradford Park Avenue, Gareth Roberts, is a Bradfordian. He's a very rich Bradfordian. He's made his money in oil in Texas. And his legacy is, or his plan is to leave a legacy for sport in South Bradford, which involves Horsfall and the land surrounding it being able to be used for decades, if not centuries, to come. So I think if the opportunity is there to have a serious chat with him about getting Horsfall improved to, obviously you've got to go through the council, if getting that up to standard, I think that's an option. But again, the council haven't got any money, the RFL haven't got any money, the Bulls haven't got any money. So you've got three stubborn parties. Someone's going to have to blink, otherwise the Bulls will be playing at Oddsall again next year.
There we go. Well, in all this news, it's been kind of forgotten that we've actually got League Leaders' Shield been handed out last weekend. Yeah. Yeah, we've forgotten about. Congratulations to St Helens.
When are they going to give it to them? I would hope it's Thursday night, otherwise...
Well, they've got a precedent with Toronto, haven't they? It's got to be done at Warrington, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, it was done at the championship one was done at Widnes, wasn't it? So it's all got to be done in Cheshire. I would hope it's tomorrow, Thursday, depending on when you're listening to this, because otherwise it's going to get overshadowed by the Cup, isn't it?
Well, the next home game is actually
after the Challenge Cup final. So yeah. They're either going to be parading both trophies or they're going to be parading the League Leaders' Shield 5 days after losing at Wembley.
Will they celebrate
it? Well, they should do.
They didn't do last year. Yeah. It was the most awkward celebration of all time, wasn't it?
Yeah. But if they won at Warrington on Thursday night and they brought the shield out, you can bet your bottom dollar they'd celebrate it there.
Yeah, I suppose.
With an away end full of Saints fans. They'd be all up for that.
It would be a bit like Toronto being given it at Widnes, though, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be to universal acclaim.
Will Warrington fans boo? That's
it
the
would,
question.
I'm sorry, but if fans want to boo a side that
riles them up, do it.
That hasn't been dirty, that has just played excellent rugby, then that's on them.
Super League could make a story. Super League could get a story there.
It would make more. It would say more about Warrington than it would about St Helens.
Well, Warrington against St Helens live on television on Thursday night. Let's start by talking about Warrington. I mean, they've named an 18-man squad for this one, haven't they?
Yeah, but Matty Smith's going to take it up to 19, isn't he?
Is Matty Smith confirmed now?
Yes.
Right, OK, so Matty Smith is in. So are Warrington all set now for the running?
They are, but there's an unanswered question. Some people seem to believe Matty Smith is eligible to play at Wembley. I have been told he isn't, and I've read the operational rules, and it doesn't look like he is. So that's an unanswered question, because we're expecting any time while we're recording this Warrington to confirm the extent of Blake Austin's injury. It's going to be interesting if if he's out for Wembley. It's going to be very interesting.
The general talk's 2 to 4 weeks, isn't it?
Well, Wembley's 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
How important is this game for Warrington, given what happened at the
weekend? Yeah, well, it is important, because the reality is they're not actually secure of second place anymore, are they? So
no, it's a vital game for them. And, you know, I'm sure they'll be giving everything. That's you know, absolutely definite, I would have thought. Actually, just going back to Blake Austin, you know, we have seen some examples, haven't we, in recent years of players recovering miraculously in order to play in big games. The only problem
some of
them is
backfire,
that
though, no?
Well, I was just going to say that there is a record of people playing at Wembley carrying injuries and playing very badly, you know, still being badly affected
at the
by
same
injury.
Time. So, does anyone have any doubt that Blake Austin
will play at Wembley? He'll play.
Probably, yeah. But
I'm not saying how
fit he will be, of course, is the $64,000 question.
Again, it's one of those. It's always a you find out after the game, isn't it? It's one of those wonderful hindsight questions.
Yeah.
He'll play.
But, you know, similar injury, Keith Senior, back in 2005 at Cardiff Challenge Cup final against Hull, you know, limped around till half time and then had to leave the field. That was an incredible selection boob, I think, by...
Something with Radlinski once as well, or was he ill, or was it...
Well, but he won the Landstock Trophy.
That's what I mean.
At Murrayfield, in 2002.
He was on his deathbed, wasn't he, the day before the game?
and then pulled himself off
to win the Man of the Match.
It got a serious infection. But, I recall, as long ago as 1979, Bill Ashurst, Wakefield, desperate to get him fit for the Challenge Cup final that year, and poor old Bill just wasn't fit. Everybody could see it, and that bombed. So, you know, it's a difficult one.
Well, Warrington against St Helens on Thursday night, as we said, live on television, and the League Leader Shield being presented.
Hopefully.
Probably. That's full time.
I thought they'd actually said they wanted it presented at home, and that would mean on the 30th, wouldn't it? So, I don't know. We'll see.
Let's see. They've won it, that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Friday night's TV game will be Leeds against Catalan Dragons. We'll come to Leeds in a second, but Catalans, Warrington suspensions.
Well,
Catalans have got loads, haven't they, out?
Do they have 17 available players?
Well, they've only got loads. Loads got off, didn't they, at disciplinary on Tuesday night?
Who's banned?
Only McAlorum and Tompkins. Willie Armour got off.
Did Willie Armour
Simon got off. Edwards got off.
I thought they were looking at five or six suspensions for this one.
They were initially.
But then the disciplinary panel did what they did on Tuesday night.
How did Edwards get off?
We don't know, because we don't have the full facts that they had, but from what I saw...
Well, they do have the full facts, and he was let off. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well. I think he's very fortunate to be playing on Friday.
Also, not playing on Friday will be Tom Briscoe, who's got an ACL injury, as we understand.
Shame, he had a good year.
But Leeds must be a bit of a spring in the step after that Huddersfield win.
I hope so, wouldn't you? They were very good as well.
It's like the old Leeds, wasn't it, in a way? Honestly, it was. They were just so ruthless.
It
so
was the best performance
dominant.
Of the season
complimented by probably Huddersfield's worst.
Yes, it does help.
Well, it's strange, actually, because Huddersfield were, you know, until Adam Cuthbertson had that run down the middle, Huddersfield were really competitive.
First 20 minutes,
how bad were the halves, though, for Huddersfield?
Why did he drop Tom Holmes and pick Matt Froy?
Why did he drop Tom Holmes?
Especially after that win at Hull.
But it's one from four now. It's one from four. It's probably one from three. Leeds, you can cross Leeds out. They're all right.
Can you?
I'm not doing that yet.
Yeah,
I'm not doing that yet.
Yeah, they're all right. I've seen it.
Aaron.
They will win. They will win enough games to be okay. If they play like that,
I think given, correct me if I'm wrong, they've got the best points difference of the five.
Yeah.
They have.
And here's the other anomaly.
Given that, I think if they win one more game, they're safe.
Well, here's the other thing that we're going to get onto, but we might as well discuss it now. That table says London Broncos are on 16. They might as well be on 15 with that points difference now, having getting pumped in the capital on Sunday.
I don't mean to bring this up, but Wakefield, the last game of the season, is looking like it's going to be pretty important.
Yeah. But at this moment in time, if they were both on the same amount of points they are now, London would have to go to Wakefield and win by about 50 on the final day, which is why I'm saying that they may as well be on 15 points.
Wakefield have to win two games more than any other side to stay up.
If Wakefield win two of their last five, they will stay up.
If they do, London have to win four. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think it's looking really desperate for London now.
I do.
You know, to be honest.
Saturday's an interesting one.
Let's cover it off then. They're travelling to Castleford.
Castleford.
Wakefield are hosting Hull, though.
I've seen stranger things than Wakefield beating Hull.
Yeah,
I know, and we've said this a lot about Wakefield, but it's 1-11 now. You know, it's not like
they need to sneak one.
The other thing as well,
you covered it in the paper. They're grabbing around for transfers, aren't they? As well,
yeah but they've done all right in the last. Couple of days. They've made some good signings.
They've made some good signings. I only think when you're on a bad run of form, you can tell when it's getting better. The performances pick up a little bit, even if the results don't. You see improvement.
Was Friday not qualify that? A 20-point loss at St Helens?
Well, it constitutes improvement from losing by 34 to Wigan, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's still a long way off.
And let's
face it, Saints were hardly at full tilt, were they? And there would have been more chance
if Fuller had got to Wembley, wouldn't there, this weekend?
Mm. So,
especially if Warrington lose on Thursday, then Hull will really be going over.
I'm happy to be proven wrong. We've all been proven wrong many a time this year. I don't think there's a win around the corner for Wakefield yet.
I think they'll be highly motivated on Sunday because they're in third, aren't they? They want to hold off Wigan in coming up behind them, but they also are going to have a chance of catching up Warrington. The great thing about the top five, incidentally, and one reason why I love it so much, is that every position matters so much. It's much better to be second than third.
Yeah.
And it's much better to be third.
And I'd like to see more focus on that now in the final 5 weeks, because that is a great battle.
I did start with Warrington v Saints.
No, what I mean is that everyone is talking about this battle at the bottom, and is that a good thing, really? I don't think
it's a bad thing.
No, but shouldn't we be putting all our focus on the race to be champions of the competition?
I think there's two good stories. There's two good plots. There's not one, there's two.
There's one. London are getting relegated, aren't
they? I'm not sure yet. I'm still not convinced that Hull KR are safe.
The really interesting thing is that there are seven clubs in competition for the five playoff places.
Yeah, yeah.
And only five in competition for the relegation spots.
Could Leeds about top five now?
No. Someone's got to stop Salford.
Bearing in mind what we just discussed there about London, Wakefield, is it right that if Leeds do win on Friday, that it is possibly that is it for them? They would be
Leeds safe. If Leeds win on Friday. Yes, with points difference, they then go five ahead of London in effect.
Yeah.
What about Hull KR? Hull KR will be travelling to Wigan on Friday night.
Yeah, I don't see a win there.
Cal Trout has signed from Dewsbury.
I don't see a win there on Friday night. However, I've seen them quite a bit under Tony Smith, and I saw them on Sunday when they beat Castleford. They're not getting relegated. They've improved. If they would have kept Sheens for the rest of the year, they would probably already be bottom of the competition and already in trouble. They changed the coach. It's a huge gamble to do it mid-season, but it has paid off for Hull KR. Tony Smith's come in. He's made a massive difference to them.
Here's a thought. Tony Smith's only got a contract at the end of this season. St Helens looking for a coach.
Is that a possibility? Tony Smith's not dumb. I think he'll stay on the basis to stay up.
Well, I think if they were to go down, he may well do, but at the moment, he's not got a contract beyond the end of this season.
No, I'll tell you what, Martin, if you think Tony Smith's going to be new St Helens coach, put some money on it, because you'll be rich afterwards.
Anyway.
I'm not that confident. I'm just floating the idea. We actually listed in League Express this week a number of potential coaches. We didn't put Tony Smith in. But interestingly enough, the guy who's coming top of the list is none other than a former Wigan coach,
Sean Wayne.
Absolutely.
Well, I think they're going to appoint an Aussie.
I think so. Yes.
And I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed with that.
Why? Who should get the St Helens job?
No. My point. I made this last week. You don't get longevity out of Aussie coaches. Tony Smith is an exception. Tell me the last time that an Aussie coach did for a long period of time at a Super League club.
Steve Price is probably going to, isn't he? We've signed a new long-term deal.
How many times has he been linked with jobs elsewhere already, though?
How many jobs has he taken elsewhere?
Yeah, okay. You've got to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's not even 2 years in yet.
Yeah.
However, if you ask if St Helens win everything this year, will they be upset that Holbrook's leaving after two and a half years? They'll remember it for the right reasons.
But
Daniel Anderson was the same.
Of course. The thing is, we all know how important salary caps are. We all know that every club, you don't plan for 1 year, you plan for two or three years. When you're changing coaches, I think Saints are in a fantastic position. They've got a settled squad. There's only one player leaving. They've kept all the key players. I don't think there's a big issue with Holbrook leaving now.
No, because
the coach that comes in has a great
squad. Got to get the appointment.
I wonder whether Sean Long regrets leaving St Helens now. That's an interesting one.
I bet he doesn't. They've got to get the appointment right. Mm. I'm not, you know, I don't know a great deal about the NRL, but we'll see.
So Wigan against Hull KR. We'll turn our attentions then to that race for fourth and fifth, because it is heating up. I mean, there's, what's that, four sides who could all make that fourth, fifth spot?
I think it's three teams battling for fifth, I think, because I think Wigan will be okay.
I think Wigan will be okay. Wigan will definitely be third or fourth.
I think it's Catalan, Salford and Castleford battling for fifth.
And interestingly enough, Catalans have the worst points difference of those three, don't they?
Yeah.
So, you know, if Catalans lose on Friday at Leeds...
Well, this will make Matt happy, won't it? Because while it would be an incredible story if London stayed up, it would be a far bigger and far more worthwhile story to tell if Salford made the top five.
We discussed it last week. They're going straight to the grand final. Well, my nana's got tickets in the Stretford end.
I think last week I said I thought it was a shootout between Cass and Salford, purely because I just think Catalans are too inconsistent. Wigan, those four teams, Wigan have been consistent for a while. Yeah. Cass had built a decent run of form.
Hull as well now.
Hull, I don't need to worry about.
Yeah.
And Salford have won three on the bounce now.
Yeah. Well, I think Wigan will probably end up being third. I mean, they're only 2 points behind Hull at the moment.
I can't see them getting past Hull.
They've got a better points difference. Sure. No, they've only got to win one more game than Hull with a better points difference. So, you know, it's going back to the points difference become very important at this time of the
year. I like Hull. Wigan have lost to Loughlin. Wigan have lost to Loughlin for 6 weeks.
How big an influence has Loughlin been this year, though?
Well, I think the way Wigan played at the weekend against Hull with some of those young guys playing
Smithies
in the pack. Absolutely terrific. Partington good, Smith is good.
Interesting where they fit, where they fit French in this weekend. Mm. He's going to play, isn't he, by the sounds of it?
Yeah. Who's that, sorry?
Bevan French, he's going to play. Right. Be interesting where they fit him in.
But back to my point, Cass had been really consistent, probably since they lost to Hull on the Thursday night. So that was a blip, and I think a bit of a damaging one for them, because they had played well for a number of weeks and then didn't.
Had no McShane. Very noticeably missed McShane.
I still think, though, despite the results, despite Catalans winning, despite Castleford losing, I still think it's a toss-up between Salford and Cass for the fifth spot, even though Catalans are currently in there.
Well, Salford on Sunday will be hosting the Huddersfield Giants.
I think Huddersfield won there earlier this season, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and they were fantastic.
Huddersfield won.
Weren't Salford good for the first 20 minutes, and then suddenly the wheels just came off?
Huddersfield seem to play better away, don't they?
I still think.
And Salford actually seem to play better away as well. A lot of clubs do.
I still think Huddersfield will be all right, because over the course of the season, they go on a run of 2-3 losses and come up with an absolutely unreal performance and beat
They
someone.
Often win unexpectedly and lose unexpectedly.
So I still think they'll pick up
a big loss to Leeds, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100% damaging, but they've had loads of disasters like this, and then they come back and
it'll be really interesting to see the selection of Huddersfield this weekend, to see whether Tom Holmes comes back in. I mean, I thought it was a bad mistake to pick Alex Mellor, if I'm honest, against Leeds last Friday, because I thought there was a lot of talk before the game about, you know, him joining Leeds and the pressure it put on. Well, he missed seven tackles, which was, you know, at least three more than anybody else. But it put a lot of pressure on the kid's shoulders. I think when it comes out that a player has joined another club for the following season before the end of the current season, if I were a coach, I would never play that player
Here's one for you then. If it's a Wigan Salford grand final, does Ian Watson drop Jackson Hastings?
That might be a bit different, but I think that's different. But with a young, relatively inexperienced kid like Alex Mellor, you know, I'd be quite reluctant to give him a run against a team that he's going to play for next season.
I think that's everything. For the Super League, we covered everything there, haven't we? Hey, let's move on to the Championship then. Four games left, but not enough for Rochdale. Commiserations to them, who were beaten by Batley and relegated.
I don't think they'll be too upset, Ben. I think they probably knew about 3 months ago it was coming. I think they've already gone through the anguish and the heartache, haven't they?
Mm. Yeah, but the top five for the Championship now looks set, doesn't it? Positions to be sorted out, really.
Bulls are 5 points from the playoffs. It's looking like a tall ask.
It's not irretrievable, but it's unlikely.
They need a lot of snookers.
Only four more games. Gosh, I think it's not.
I don't think they'll make it. It's not impossible, but I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, you know, will York finish in second place where they are now?
Yeah. Talk about how big it is in Super League. It's the same in the Champ, isn't it? Second is huge.
Pound for pound here. If York do finish second in the Championship, that for me, barring a St. Helens treble, would be the biggest achievement.
Whitehaven winning League One.
I think Whitehaven
winning League One. Yeah, it'd be up there. But York finishing second in the would just be outrageous.
James Ford's stock continues to rise.
I should say the performance that Bradford put in against Toronto was pretty good, in all fairness. It went the way of Toronto. York now one win by my maths from making the playoffs after overcoming Barrow last week.
They do have an awfully tough running, don't they, York?
We said that 2 weeks ago, and they won.
No, but they've got
Toronto. They've got Toronto this
Toronto
weekend.
Away.
Lee.
Toronto, Lee.
Toulouse. And Halifax.
And Halifax. Yeah. The final
one win there, isn't it?
Very good.
Toulouse and Lee are almost there as well. Both had to work, though, to get their wins last week against Halifax and Swinton. Matty Ashton, by the way.
Yeah, what player?
Mm. Charlie. Rochdale lad as well, so there you go. Realistically, it's between Fev and Sheffield, I reckon, for that final
place.
Yeah,
I think Fev will get it.
Featherstone are 4 points ahead, and again, they've got a massively superior point. Yeah.
Sheffield have the distraction of the 1895 Cup. They've still got Bradford and Halifax to play.
I don't think Sheffield have got a chance of getting in there now.
I think it is. It's just where they finish. I mean, Toronto obviously top, but then I think
Toulouse will be second, although Lee are coming up really fast, aren't they? So, you know, it's between...
They've been a bit... I mean, they lost to Widnes, admittedly, in the Cup. They only just scraped past Swinton. What we've got... Swinton could be a bit of a dark horse next year, couldn't they? They're competing with these teams at the top.
Well, these kids, they've got Matty Ashton, Mike Butt, you know, real try-scorers, aren't they? You know,
Stuart Little for the 2 year extension on his contract.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
I was going to say, Featherstone nearly slipped up at the weekend now, but Dane Chisholm scored a field goal with a minute to go or something. I mean,
barring York, they all nearly slipped up, didn't they?
Yeah. With 20 minutes left, it was like going to be a seismic day, wasn't it?
Yeah, because we were messaging each other during the game, and literally with 30 minutes to go,
Fev was struggling at Jewsbury.
They were all losing, other than York. The rest of the top five were all losing. And Bradford were winning.
That's why they're the top five, though, aren't they? Because they came through
at the end.
I mean, we'll cover off the playoffs and Championship, obviously, closer to the time, but the fact that they're going to be on Sky, and if it is those five, I mean, it's dynamite, isn't it?
I think that's the best news we've had for quite a long time, actually, that Sky are going to cover the Championship playoffs. I think that's tremendous for the competition.
Definitely good.
Tremendous for rugby league.
Be interesting when they play them.
Let's talk about League One. And Whitehaven and Workington slugged it out on Sunday to share a point.
Good crowd there as well.
Very good crowd. Yeah. What was it? Over 2,000?
2,360, the official attendance.
So that means that Haven's lead is now cut to 3 points. That's because Newcastle Thunder inevitably beat the West Wales Raiders. So that sets up quite nicely because Oldham beat the Scholars as well. So this weekend's match between Oldham and Newcastle on Sunday is pretty much winner stays on.
Newcastle got a game in hand on top, haven't they, as well, as of Oldham.
Yes.
I still make Newcastle marginal favourites, I think, but Whitehaven are in the box seat, aren't they?
Hunslet, they're kind of caught in no man's land, aren't they? They beat the North Wales Crusaders by 42 points to 18.
They're the playoffs, aren't they?
And while we're discussing League One, a big good luck to Scott Naylor, who's leaving at the end of the season.
Been there a long time, hasn't he?
8 years, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a stint at the club, and I'm sending him all our best. And one last result as well, just for you, Aaron. Coventry Bears 20, Keithley Cougars 46.
Yeah, good decision, sacking Craig Lingard.
I saw something about reserve grade and Keithley not being allowed.
Yeah, and Whitehaven as well.
Which is pretty... Well, Whitehaven, I've decided to go on that route just this year. I mean, Keith have been doing it for...
Yeah, we need to find out what the reasoning is,
don't
we?
It does seem really strange, doesn't it?
Until we have the reasoning and the background for it.
Unpopular opinion.
No way up.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for Keithley, and Halifax haven't confirmed either way yet. I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world for them.
No, I don't think it would for them.
For Whitehaven... I think it's really poor because that area of the world needs it. Mm. Right, so let me put it to you from Halifax's my perspective on where Halifax would be. They've had some great players come through their reserve grade. Nick Rosethorn, obviously at Toronto now, Toffin got a Super League. Chester Butler going to Super League. Elliot Morris, who's been great. You've
got a lot of Welsh players as well.
Yeah, Brandon Moore. There's a lot that have gone and played regularly for Halifax. But they've been only one of four or five clubs that have had a reserve grade. They're now going to be in competition for players with 11 Super League clubs, because you can take Catalans out of the equation, potentially 10 because Toronto next year, potentially. Where are those players, the Brandon Moores of this year, you know, coming out of academies, your Elliot Morrises, where are they going to go? They're not going to go to Halifax, are they? So Halifax are going to end up with basically the bottom of the barrel. No disrespect intended, but it's just the reality. They are, which they have done already, but the bottom of the barrel was a lot higher standard than it is going to be now.
Mm.
The cost, I've been given a few figures by a few clubs. With all the games that are going to be played, they think it's going to cost between £80,000 and £90,000 to run. Are Halifax going to get a return on investment spending that much money on reserve grade for the players that they're going to be getting? My argument would probably be no. So in this cutthroat business where money is tight, as we all know, is it the best investment? No. I think Whitehaven is a different one because there is a player pool up there that could really have benefited from that.
Mm.
I'm not sure Halifax and Keighley would be. I know that Keighley have come out and said they're angry with it. I completely understand. I don't think in the bigger picture, I don't know if it's the worst thing.
Yeah, it's a good argument. I can see what
you're
getting
at. You have to be a bit strategic with this, don't you, as a sport? Because I was speaking to Jermaine Coleman at London last week, and he raised a concern that, you know, because they have got a couple of dual reg players in there, that it's going to impact League One quite heavily, all of this. And
I think the one thing I would say is I don't think we should be encouraging clubs not to develop their own players. I think if we're going to go reserve grade, we simply have no problem with that whatsoever. I think we need to find something for Championship League One clubs to do if we're not convinced that they're going in the reserve grade structure, and how they can still develop their own players. Mm. Whether we encourage them to go down a more local route, you know, schools, programs, whatever, I don't know. But there should be something there. And obviously with that, you've then got to entice them to do it, and the way you do that is finances. So if they're then picked up by a Super League club to go reserve grade, whatever, there's some sort of financial reward for doing it. I do think it's important that we still use these community clubs outside of Super League and them have some sort of responsibility and incentive to develop.
Yeah, and it has to be sustainable as well. There's no point just taking a load of open age players from these community clubs. But you talked about school development there, and that takes us to our interview this week. League One, obviously a club banging on the door, sometimes with the forehead as well, was Manchester Rangers. And of course, Manchester Rangers got knocked back a few times, which almost looked fatal for the club this year. But no, the club has gone back to the drawing board and reinvented itself in a lot of ways. And for more on the Manchester Rangers and where they're going, let's hear from their foundation manager. Here's Matt Valentine.
Basically, as most people know, we were originally set up looking to gain a professional licence in the future. For one reason or another, that hadn't and wasn't looking likely to happen. So our board effectively pulled out of that venture because it didn't look like an open door for us. Off the back of that, we lost a number of our players who went to pursue other options, which, fair enough, I completely understand. And then we withdrew the squad from the Northwest Men's League because we weren't actively sustainable in the guys that we were at that point. So the plan for Rangers is we have a strong junior section coming through at Bellevue Bees in a couple of years when they get up to open age level, bring Rangers back. I know there's a core group of players there who have previously played for us and want to come back playing. They'll be supported by that youth structure coming through. And then, yeah, we'll be back into the leagues at that point. I know it needs to be like that. We need that youth coming through to top up the open age squad and make sure that they're competing.
I mean, you touched upon Bellevue Bees carried on regardless, as did the Community Foundation. And that takes us to why we brought you on, because the Community Foundation, the work continues.
Yeah, absolutely. Our Community Foundation, as it is now, has always been a completely separate entity to the club itself. The club was a private limited company, and the foundation was originally a CIC, so a charitable incorporated company, which is a company with charitable objectives. In February this year, we registered as a full charity with the Charities Commission. So we now have charitable status as a foundation, as all other pro clubs do as well. So yeah, we're going from strength to strength, really. I think it's been almost a good thing for the foundation, strangely, on the sort of flip side, because it's allowed more time and resource to be poured into the foundation rather than the club venture itself. A lot of my time was spent on the day-to-day runnings of Manchester Rangers, and now that's not there, I'm able to focus on the foundation and grow that, and seeing participation increase across the board. We're looking to grow new clubs. We're looking to strengthen existing clubs, grow our school's offer, and it's all going from strength to strength, really.
What is the objective of the foundation? Is it to because it's obviously we know about rugby league on the outskirts of Manchester, but this feels like a very much City of Manchester specific venture.
Yes, yeah, I'd say absolutely as it currently is. It may be in the future that the foundation, and it is a goal of the foundation to spread into areas such as Stockport, Tameside, etc. as we grow, but as it stands in our current resources, we are focused on the City of Manchester as a sort of area, and we do have some involvement in South Manchester as well, down in Wythenshawe.
Like you said, in a couple of years, remarkably, that's how time flies, you're going to have players who are going to be at open age level. So that right there, that conveyor belt's worked out quite well. What else has been going on with regards to developing the junior game?
Yeah, so a lot of our delivery is very much schools focused. We don't have the sort of the luxury of being in a Wigan or a St Helens or a Warrington area where kids come to you. We have to go and get the kids. If we want kids playing rugby league, we need to go and find them, because they don't know what rugby league is before they've got a ball in their hand. We don't have that culture whereby, you know, your parents will take little Johnny at 7 years old to Wigan St Pat's. That doesn't happen in Manchester. We need to go into the schools. We need to engage the kids. We need to get them loving, having a rugby ball in their hands and having fun. And from that, naturally, that progression is to then get them into a community club. So our school's offer is growing day by day, really. We're doing more and more. We're putting in a full-time development officer from September. So we'll have a full-time coach on the ground that's sole job is to go out, deliver in the schools, and then transfer those kids into a community club environment. And essentially our job as a foundation is, one is the growth of participation in rugby league, increasing the health and well-being of the children of Manchester. One thing we're very keen on is not just physical, but also mental health of young people. And finally, we want to improve social cohesion. So some of the areas that we deliver in Manchester, there are issues in segregated groups, there are issues in antisocial behaviour, etc., etc. And that all falls under our remit to use the powerful tool of sport to develop these young people to grow and be better people effectively.
And the work that's been done by the foundation already, I mean, you've touched upon the schools there, but you've already dipped your toe in that with regards to setting up a high school league for year 10 kids, as I understand. That's been quite a successful venture for the foundation, and you're lucky to grow that by including primary school age as well at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we've had this academic year, the 2018-19 academic year, we piloted what we called the Manchester Schools League. Now, as far back as I can remember, I've been involved in rugby league in Manchester for about going on for 7 years now. There's never been a competitive competition in Manchester, certainly that I know of and have asked around that people in Manchester know of, outside of the National Schools competition, and then some schools have entered into the Salford Schools League. But Manchester itself, as far as anyone can remember, doesn't have a history of a competitive schools competition. So what we looked to do was introduce that as a way of taking kids from playing 9-a-side at school, getting them playing 13-a-side games, which is what the school league is, and then transferring into the community clubs from there. It gives them that stepway from going into playing small-sided games at school, full-sided games in an atmosphere that they're still comfortable with, and then that gets them hungry to then go and play the full game at community clubs. That was quite successful for us this year. We've had transfer from it, so we're rolling that out next year over 3 age groups. It was originally just year 10 this year. That's where our highest participation was. So we rolled out over that age group, which was successful. And now we're going to roll out over 2 more. Year 7, 8 and 11 next year are going to have a competitive schools league.
Brilliant stuff. That then takes us to the next step. And obviously you're lucky to get the high schools sorted over the coming years. But then there's obviously feeding into the high schools as well. Because like you say, Manchester isn't like Wigan or Warrington or St Helens, where you could take that kind of pathway for granted. you've got to essentially do it yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. Like I said, we don't very rarely get kids coming to us to play. It's when we've already engaged them, or through bringing a mate along, that sort of stuff, without having some sort of connection to rugby league through either a friend or through doing it in school, then it doesn't happen, because it's a fledgling sport at the end of the day in Manchester. It's not a major sport. It's eclipsed by the likes of football, basketball, athletics. So we've got our work cut out for us, absolutely. But kids, when they get a taste of rugby league, they enjoy it and they want to continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously that takes us then, we started the interview off, Matt, talking about the past. What about the future then? There's a lot of players there, isn't there? And strangely, within that central belt of Greater Manchester, there aren't too many community clubs there, are there? So, I mean, you've got the Bellevue Bees, but this does bode well for the growth of the community game within the city of Manchester, let alone the professional stuff.
Yeah, 100%, because our goal as a foundation is to not only sort of support existing community clubs as in Bellevue Bees, but to grow further community clubs. So we're in talks to develop a community club out of Chorlton, Withington area next year. That'll start at under sevens and then organically grow up. And what we'll do is we'll go into the primary schools in that area, give some targeted delivery and try and focus and direct them into a community club there. It all needs to be organic and sustainable growth, really. We can't throw darts at a map and hope for the best. We need to really target year on year and make sure that we're growing it right, and then supporting those community clubs to become self-sustainable. That's the biggest thing. There's no point in us setting up a club and doing a load of delivery, sending a load of kids there then to fail in 2 or 3 years' time, because, I mean, we can't babysit the clubs forever. We can't have a running stake in each community club. What we need to do is develop it over a period of years and then hand over to a committed board of people there, a committee that will take the club forward, and then we'll continue to deliver and signpost effectively. That's the plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how you get sustainability, isn't it? And that then leads me to my final question, Matthew. And obviously there's been talk about, you know, the decline of the game within Greater Manchester. What's being shown here is there is a plan for within the city of Manchester. Are you optimistic for the future for the sport in the city if you can get it right?
100%, mate. We've got a blank canvas to work from, and you look at the participation figures within Manchester between now and 5 years ago, and it's huge. The increase is massive. There was one or two schools playing rugby league in Manchester 5 years ago. We've now got, I think, six or seven secondary schools tied and committed to the schools league. We've got, say, primary schools. We've delivered in upwards of 25 this year, primary schools. That'll be more next year as well. So there's plenty of people getting involved in rugby league. We just need to make it sustainable within a community club environment, and that's the big challenge for the foundation. The challenge isn't getting out into schools and delivering. We can do that as a matter of course. It's getting these kids playing rugby league regularly, getting the parents involved to support that, and letting these community clubs grow out of facilities that can handle that.
Matt Valentine there from the Manchester Rangers, and that's a way of bouncing back, isn't it?
It certainly is, and it's really great to hear what they're doing in Manchester, I think. And there's a great deal of potential there, it seems to me, for youngsters coming to play rugby league, and I'd love to see some kids coming through and, you know, making it from there right into the top levels of the sport, because, you know, I still think Manchester is a name that we ought to have in rugby league at a significant level.
It's interesting that the Bellevue Bees junior players in a couple of years will be at open age level.
And yeah,
that,
sure.
That's proved that development's worked quite
absolutely
well. So best of luck to Manchester Rangers. But that's nearly it for this week's show. But just before we go, just a couple of bits and bobs. I saw on TotalRL.com, the official website for breaking rugby league news, the story about Greece Rugby League. And that too has been going on in the background.
It's really weird.
It's a very odd situation, this, isn't it?
Impossible to understand, actually, if we're really honest about it, as outsiders. I've no idea what it... You know, Greece not being able to play in Greece because the government recognises some other body for running rugby league there just seems absolutely crap.
I mean, only in rugby league, isn't it?
Well, who knows? But, you know, the Rugby League International...
Rugby League, to be fair.
The International Federation recognises the, you know, the Greek Rugby League governing body.
That's got them, that's got them to World Cup qualification.
That's got them to World Cup qualification, but the Greek government refuses to recognise them. I just can't.
I mean, there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity here for Greece Rugby League. I mean, they're probably going to play in London. They're in a group, and I think they only have to beat Russia really to qualify for the World Cup. So if they do qualify, then
I'm not sure about that.
It's Greece. It's Greece, Scotland, and Russia, I think, in their group. Well, and two go up.
Oh right. Okay. Well, is that so?
According to Wikipedia, that
I'd have to check on that.
Well, it must be true. Yeah. But yeah, so keep an eye on totalrl.com, and I'm sure there'll be more stories on Greece Rugby League and where they're heading next in coming months. But just before we go, other bits of housekeeping, back chat.
We had on Richard Fewlis, Graham Taylor, and Dion Cross. It was good.
Yeah,
it was good actually, given that it was scrambled together late again.
But don't give away your secrets. Keep the curtain where it is.
Monday desperate free rounds are becoming the norm.
But that's going to be on Free Sport on Thursday. And Aaron, The Guardian on Saturday, what's going to be in there?
Oh, it's all the usual news and breaking match reports and everything.
Anything?
Possibly.
And Martin, League Express on Monday. Big weekend for Rugby League, so...
Well, every weekend's a big weekend at the moment, isn't it? But, you know, we'll have the second part. By the way, there's a very popular article in the Rugby League Heroes series with the great Brian Lockwood. And this week he was talking about his time at Castleford and his time in Australia with the Bulldogs and so on. Next weekend he goes, you know, for the latter part of his career, which is which actually ended with two appearances at Wembley in 1980 and 81. It's a really interesting read. It really is. So I would recommend to everybody, you know, to get a copy just for that, if nothing else.
Excellent. Well, that's it for this week's Total Rugby League Show. Big thank you to Matt Valentine from Manchester Rangers for joining us. Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Aaron Barrow, welcome back. And Matt Sadler,
thank you
for joining us. But wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.